This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Last week, we had Ian Rowland as our guest, and we also started a contest in which one lucky listener would have their name drawn to get a chance to win one of three of his books on cold reading. And I'm going to announce the name of that person on the backside of this podcast, so stay tuned for that, and you can find out who it is that won. This was an amazing opportunity that Ian had offered us, and I mentioned last week that we were only going to be running this for a very short time. Typically, we run this for a couple of weeks, but due to some other situations, I am only able to run this for about a week, and so, again, we are announcing the winner here today, so stay tuned after this episode. This week, we're going to be talking with Keith Leff, who had recently come across the U.S. with his lecture tour, and he has been performing for a number of years in restaurants. He is a full-time professional magician, not someone necessarily that you have heard of. He is not someone who is a celebrated magician who attends a lot of conventions or has been seen on their roster. He's just kind of keeping his head down and working all the time and finding one job after the next. And that's why that I call him the everyman magician. He is someone who is just like many of the rest of you who might be doing this on a full-time basis or even a part-time basis and might have another full-time job, but you keep after it. And he is inspirational from that standpoint about how that he's always finding new opportunities, whether it's going to be working in restaurants, working at fairs and festivals, or whether it's working trade shows, corporate events, and whatever that it takes in order to make good money to make him a successful, financially successful, I should say, also a professional magician. And he's out of the Kansas City area, and he has a lot of great advice and things that I would suggest that you tune into and pay attention to, even though you might think, who is this guy again? Yeah, Keith Leff. You've not, perhaps many of you had heard of him, but after this, I think you might be willing to call him friend then also. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Keith Leff, here on The Magic Word. Keith Leff is a magician from the Kansas City, Missouri area, and I always like to talk with people from time to time who are really kind of the backbone, the guys who are out there working making their bread and butter from doing these kinds of magic shows, whether it's going to be for restaurants and corporate work, doing whatever it takes in order to entertain the public and as a byproduct, make a little bit of money then as well. In addition to that, he's been doing some lectures around the country, and he had come through our area recently. And so I thought you might enjoy having a perspective from the common working man, magician. Here he is, Keith Leff. Hey there, Keith.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here then as well. I know that you've been working for quite some time and doing a lot of restaurants and everything else. And a lot of us have a lot of background where we can say, well, I worked on cruise ships or, you know, corporate deals or birthday parties, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like that you, in your background, have done a little bit of all of that as well.
Yes. Yes, as a full-time professional, I pretty much have been in any and every venue you can imagine.
Has there been something, I mean, like with me, I used to do doves and rabbits and livestock, and I did illusions. And a little at a time, as I've gotten older, I started scaling down and getting smaller and smaller and getting rid of the live animals, et cetera. Have you gotten to a point where that you have tried a little bit of everything, but then started to get to a point where you are now satisfied with a more of a niche area or niche type of magic that you like to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think close up is probably my forte, sleight of hand type magic with cards and coins, everyday objects, things that are organic. I've gotten away from prop based magic where the prop does the magic for you.
Right.
And I think everyone, magicians and laymen alike, appreciate the skill and talent required to be able to do sleight of hand, you know, with borrowed objects or, you know, seemingly impromptu or really impromptu types of apparatus, or I shouldn't say apparatus. That's what the kind of magic I'm trying to get away from. But just, you know, things that people are familiar with: cards, coins, dollar bills, you know, straws. You know, especially since I have a restaurant background, I do things with objects that are found in a restaurant. I do silverware bends, salt shaker effects with sugar packets, signed coins end up in sugar packets and things like that. But yeah, I've done it all. I used to eat fire. I used to do a fire eating act. I used to produce live doves in my show as well. And this day and age, it's really, I'm hard pressed to find a venue that'll allow open flames or live animals. And
Good
so
point.
I had four birds in my dove act at one point in time, and I'm just down to one bird now, and I kind of keep her as a pet more than anything. I mean, she used to earn her keep, but I guess she's retired now since there's a no live animal clause in most of the corporate venues I go to. So
Did you have an assistant that helped you, or did you do this in one?
no, I had an assistant for a short period of time. But yeah, it was mostly just a one man show. So,
And did you develop the
she,
act for a contest or for actual corporate
um,
work?
no, I just thought it would be really cool to have. I mean, I think a lot of magicians, I don't know how they get into the dove magic. I mean, of course, Lance Burton was definitely an influence. There was another local guy here that did a really solid act with some doves, and I thought that is so cool. I want to do that. And so, I got a dove, and then I got two doves. Smoke and Mirrors were their names. Then I added a couple more birds. I got an I can I know a lot more about doves than I ever planned on learning. So I know if I bit off more than I can chew, but it was a lot of fun. It was just the audiences just loved the doves and the live animals. I think it just kind of really added a different dynamic to the show. So I enjoyed it while I was doing it.
In
Haven't.
some parts of the country, and I've talked with some people in the past who said they've actually used doves in restaurants for walk around.
Yeah, I've
Now,
heard of that.
I think it's kind of strange because most places I have ever been will not allow animals of any kind. I mean, unless it's a service animal,
Yeah, that's I don't think I would ever do that. I mean, doves, their feathers fly off.
Yeah, and you got
They
that
poop at
dust.
will.
Yeah, that's true.
I just think it would be a sanitation thing more than anything. I don't know why. Better to be safe than sorry. So,
That's kind of the way that I see it then as well. Well, when you were developing that, did you ever take that to contests, to
yeah,
conventions?
I did it here at a local contest, the local IBM Ring 129 contest. I did that. It was funny too because I did my fire eating and my doves. It's a beautiful number. It was all choreographed to music. I did some ball manipulations. The last ball changed into a silk, and then I did the crystal tube where three silks go into the tube. They end up being tied together. Then I produced my first dove, and then put the silks in a fire dove bag. Produced the second dove. But anyway, it was interesting. I was told I should have won. I think I would have won first place, but I was disqualified for using fire in the act. And the chairman of the committee, contest chairman, asked me why I did that. And I said, well, I didn't know there was a no fire clause because, one of my mentors used to do fire eating in the contests all the time. And he said, oh, I sent you an email. And I said, oh, no, you didn't. And he said, yes, I did. And I said, well, I didn't get it. And it was interesting because all the other performers apparently were aware of the no fire clause, and they saw my torches and my lighter fluid on my table backstage. Nobody said anything. I
Of
guess they
course
were
not.
wanting me to disqualify myself. So then the next day I got a long email with the chairman profusely apologizing because the email was sitting in his drafts and he never sent it. So but it's interesting you bring that up because I was thinking about maybe doing that again this year for the contests. I've always qualified to perform in regional, national, local contests. Been quite a few of them, won quite a few of them. But a lot of times I end up getting a gig at the last minute or, shortly there before the contest is held. But yeah, I've been thinking about maybe doing the act again this year, minus the fire eating. Adding something else to that for our stage contest here in Kansas City, but that remains to be seen.
That's what I was going to ask you about the fire eating. If that's been something or not, just fire in general, assume the rules are still the same. They haven't loosened those.
No, there's still no fire.
It makes sense. Years ago, I stopped using fire in my act. I used to as well when I'd do a a burn bill routine, for an example, or cigarette through coat. That was Terry Seabrook's. I mean, that was a standard in my show for a long time until I finally couldn't find anybody who had cigarettes, or if they did, they wouldn't admit that they were smoking when I'd ask for one. You know, so I used to actually bring my own cigarettes, and I would say, "Okay, well, you know, I do happen to have one," and then I would go through with the routine. But then it got so coarse with the smoke detectors that was the issue of no, I'm wanting to set that off, and that can be a real problem if you're in a banquet room and you are doing a burn bill routine and all of a sudden everybody gets soaked
Yeah, I've
and
always
you're
been paranoid
responsible.
about that. I always would like, you know, light the torch and kind of hold it up there for a longer period of time than what it would normally be lit during the routine. But fortunately, I never had any issues with that. But I'm sure that's probably happened to some people, and that would not be good.
Well, there's a new thing now. I say new. It's been around for a while that some places have, in which there are laser beams, apparently. And if you if smoke or something crosses that beam anywhere, because I guess it's going back and forth rapidly, so that way they don't have to have smoke alarms. They just have this beam. And if something breaks the beam, basically, that sets off the smoke or the fire alarm, basically.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I know that is because that happened at a show I was in. One time at a place not to be named right now, but anyhow, I had moved something on stage, and whenever I did, I put this potted plant, and this potted plant was taller than, I mean, you were first of all elevated on the stage, and then the next thing, of course, then the plant was taller than anybody else who would be on the stage, and that apparently broke the beam, and all of a sudden the fire department showed up, and you know there was no fire or anything, but
Oh my
there
gosh.
was still an issue, and they said, well, we'll give you a pass this time, but they had not they'd signed a contract saying there would be no smoke or fire, which there wasn't any smoke or fire, but they didn't say anything about that. So that's always
No
something
more
else to worry
potted
about.
plants.
No more tall
Did the
potted
sprinklers
plants.
go off?
No, they did not. All they
I was
did
going to say at
was
least the plant got watered if the sprinklers didn't go off.
good point. Of course, it was, I think, just an artificial plant. So it was just artificial rain that was coming down, or, you know, water that was that was getting us wet. I know you've been working in restaurants then for a long time then as well. But getting into the that business to begin with, were you doing that on a part-time basis, then finally moved into doing magic? I mean, most people have that route they go as opposed to jumping right in or being full-time magician from the time they get out of school. But what was your path?
As far as restaurants go,
Well, not necessarily. I kind of wrinkle back just before that, before restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was, you know, I'm probably like most other people. You know, I started doing birthday parties, you know, when I was a kid. You know,
sure.
I got into magic real seriously. I would say, you know, when I was a teen, I had a couple of mentors. You know, I was doing part-time gigs in high school. When I got to college, I was a bartender, and I learned real fast. I could make $100 a night in tips bartending, or I could make, you know, over $300 a night in tips bartending doing magic behind the bar. And so I did that. You know, when I, around that time, after I graduated college, I ended up getting my first restaurant gig and did that just one night a week for a long time. And then in 2000, I went to my first magic convention. You know, I'm just like a lot of people. I always wanted to be like a magician for, you know, a living. I wanted to be a magician when I grew up. And I saw guys, because I was under the impression that you had to be like a David Blaine or, you know, a David Copperfield to become a professional magician. And I saw guys at this convention doing what I do now, you know, making a really nice living, just doing corporate stuff. And I'm like, wow, I can do that, you know? And so I was working at Sprint at the time. And, you know, I went back to my job and, you know, sitting behind a desk 9 to 5. And I just, after being at that magic convention, my heart wasn't in it anymore. I just couldn't do it. And I had to take a leap of faith. And, you know, one of my mentors told me, he said, follow your heart and the money will follow. So I resigned from a really good job at Sprint and started Magic Creations back in 2000 and really kind of never looked back. At that time, I started prospecting more restaurants, and I was actually working 6 nights a week in 6 different restaurants. One of those being Old Shawnee Pizza, which is a restaurant I still work at to this day. Been there for over 30 years, minus, you know, the 2 years in the pandemic. And so, yeah, you know, a lot of guys will start off in magic, or they'll start off professionally, you know, when they want to start doing it full time. They'll either go like, you know, the street route, doing street magic, or they'll get restaurant gigs. And like I talk about in my lecture, for me, I chose the restaurant path because I don't have to worry about getting a crowd, building a crowd, keeping a crowd, you know, passing the hat at the end of the act. I didn't have to worry about the elements, you know, things like that. Whether we're in the restaurant, you know, I know I'm going to get paid. I'm going to get a complimentary meal at the end of my shift. It was a little more professional, so I was going to get more bookings that way, you know, networking at the restaurant. And, you know, I didn't have to worry about the elements. So that's why I kind of went down the restaurant path.
Did you say worrying about the elements then? Did you ever do very much street magic?
Yeah, I've done street magic. I did that, you know, as well. But, you know, it wasn't really my niche. I mean, I performed a lot of fairs and festivals as well. It was kind of a niche market for a while.
As a character? As a Renaissance character or anything?
No, I actually, you know, it's funny, when I was in the fair and festival market, I didn't have much success just doing a general comedy magic show. And I put together a show for one of my agents booked me for an event in Junction City, Kansas, called the Sundown Salute. It was a 4th of July celebration. And I thought, you know, I'm going to put together a patriotic themed show. It was all red, white, and blue props, red, white, and blue costuming. All scripted out. Talked about American history, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, the colors of the flag, what they mean, what the flag represents. Did a full-on tribute to the troops during the show. Because, you know, a couple of guys that were having success in the market kind of had a niche. One of them kind of had like an old Western medicine type show. And, you know, he told me, he said, "You're too corporate. You need to come up with a hook for your fair and festival market." So when I came up with that patriotic themed act, it kind of took the fair and festival market by storm. It was a wildly popular act. I mean, I took it all over the country. And so, you know, I spent so much time and money and energy and effort in scripting this show out and creating all the props and getting the costuming together. I thought, you know, instead of just doing it that weekend on the 4th of July, I'll just do it the whole summer. And that whole summer, just I showcased it at some of the fair and festival conventions. And the agents were kind of mad, because usually the fair and festival fair board members will go to these conventions to book bands, mostly first and foremost, and then because they're more expensive than us variety acts.
Right.
And then if they have money left over, they'll book a variety act. Well, I had a line at my booth right after I showcased, you know, nobody went to the agents' booths. Nobody went to the band's booths. I had a line at my booth a mile long. And
they were booking you direct rather than going through the agents then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my agent, you know, he called me up one day. He's like, "Hey, can you be in Topeka, Kansas tonight and do 20 minutes?" I didn't know these fair and festival conventions existed. So I went and did that. Nobody had seen me before. I was the new kid on the block, and he booked like 26 fairs for me, I think, that year. Hmm. And he was mostly in the business of booking bands. Anytime he needed a variety act, he would book me. But I said, "Hey, do you mind if I come here and represent myself?" You know, and he said, "Sure." And so, you know, I did that. And, you know, the guy that told me I needed to come up with a niche, he would kind of regretted that, because he created some serious competition for him, because, you know, he had a almost like a monopoly on variety acts in that market at the time. So, but anyway.
How many years did you do that festivals and things?
I don't know, probably maybe a good 10 years.
That's a really a niche area. Yeah, that's not just street magic, and it's certainly not restaurant magic. It's its own kind of a thing in its own culture, where these people travel from one place to the other and live in tents, or, you know, because they're mainly weekend kinds of things, or maybe 3-day weekends. But it goes on anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks or something. So did you then come back home then during the week, or do you stay there, or do you live in a tent, or
it just kind of depended. You know, I mean, sometimes fairs were like week long, or state fairs are like 10 days long. Sometimes it's just, you know, a 1-day fair or whatever. So I've just, you know, there's stretches where I'm, you know, I'm gone for, you know, weeks at a time. And, you know, sometimes I'd be able to make a pit stop back home. And sometimes just, you know, living on the road, that's kind of the nature of the business.
Well, yeah, unlike a restaurant or someplace where you're going to be having a regular job, if you will, that's going to be kind of that way. Because I was wondering if you're one of those 50 milers, just kind of stayed within 50 miles of your home, basically. But it sounds like that you kind of go outside of that area, although of late, have you kind of stayed more within your home area?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I go coast to coast.
Okay.
You know, like I tell people, I have magic wand, will travel. So, you know, I'm not like David Copperfield, where people can come see me. I have to go to see them.
Sure.
But the reason I brought up the fairs and festivals is because I would do that patriotic themed show. It was called the Prestigious Patriotic Prestidigitation Performance. And but I'd also do roving magic, the sleight of hand style magic, which is like the street style magic as well, for that. But you know, it's funny, we're talking about, you know, doves and fire and stuff, and it's like the older I get, the less it's involved with my show. I mean, I have a briefcase I can go anywhere in the country with, and I just work right out of the briefcase. That, you know, it goes up on a stand, you know, pack flat, play big. And that briefcase gets lighter and lighter and lighter each year. You know, I think well, John Carney is one of my favorite magicians, and he said something one time at a lecture that really stuck with me. And he said, "He who does the most with the least wins."
Right. That's exactly
So
right.
I've definitely adopted that mentality, especially since, you know, just, you know, carry on a briefcase and go anywhere with it. So.
That's what I was saying about earlier, is how that I've cut back a little bit at a time, such that I don't do any live animals or big illusions, and doing, pack flat, play big kind of thing, and depending more upon the presentation. Because I remember talking with Fielding West about what he said, what was in your rack? And I was saying this, this, and this. And after a while, so how long is that? Like 2 hours, because I'd listed 18 things or something. It's just you need to cut a lot of things out and just script the things that you've got to make them more interesting and
Yeah,
entertaining.
exactly.
Going back again to the fairs, run fairs, and things like that, how are you paid? And that I've not worked run fair or anything, or state fairs. In that case, are you paid by the fair, and do you get tipped, or do they give you a low fee, figuring you're going to get a lot of tips, or is it tips only?
No. It's, I mean, like I said, you know, it's almost like doing street magic at the fair sometimes when you're doing the roving, you know, walk around magic. But I mean, I'm not there to collect tips. I get paid very well by the fair board. You know, there's like fair boards have treasurers, vice presidents, you know, chairman, managers. They have entertainment chairs and things like that. So yeah, I'm just paid by the fair board.
But are you talking more now about county and state fairs as opposed to, let's
Right.
say, Renaissance fairs and things?
Yeah, I mean, the local Renaissance Festival here in Kansas City is a great festival. You know, they've approached me numerous times to, you know, want me to be out there to do magic at the Renaissance Festival, but they don't pay anything. There's no stipend
That's what
whatsoever.
I
It's
thought,
just
because
strictly
they.
tips only. And you know, you have to commit to being there every weekend for, you know, quite a few weeks, and I just can't do that. You know, I can't, you know, turn down a high dollar corporate gig for, you know, going out in the Renaissance Festival, you know, passing a
Okay.
hat. So
Well, that clarifies it. That's makes much more sense. I was misunderstanding. I thought that you were saying, kind of lumping those all together, but because when I was saying going out on the road and being gone for a long time and sleeping in tents, that's what the ren fair people do, like
No, when I'm doing fairs and festivals, they put me up in a hotel.
sure. I,
The
no,
fair
no,
board
that
does,
makes
you know, they
complete
pay
sense.
mileage and pay for the hotel or airfare. So
Yeah, different kinds of fairs, that and not the ren fair type of a thing. Well, on, as far as the restaurants go, certainly there are different types of restaurants in which that you would have, like a family friendly restaurant, some that are more Fern and Brass and steakhouse kind of a place that's more upscale. And some of those, in my experience, has been harder to get into. And that is the ones that have the higher dollar. Whether they have a family, they're just trying to keep people moving through. But when they have a higher dollar thing, they're trying to keep people seated there. They really don't want the magician, seems like, coming in. It's a harder sell. Have you noticed that to be the case?
Not really. I mean, I've probably been to 25 different restaurants in 25 years, and some of them were family friendly, some of them were nice upper scale like steakhouses. I don't know if it's necessarily, I mean, some of them, you know, they, of course, you know, everyone has this preconceived notion that magic's for kids, and so it's kind of hard to overcome that stereotype when an owner or manager is like, well, that's not really the, you know, that doesn't fit into our concept. And then I pitch a free trial night. And obviously my presentation is going to be different for a family-friendly restaurant when there's kids there versus, you know, adults only for those types of venues. So, you know, seeing is believing, and, you know, they see, You're doing classy, elegant magic, sophisticated sleight of hand kind of stuff. They usually tend to, well, after you do a free trial night, they usually tend to want to try it out on a, at least a short term, if not a long term basis. I think it's really more based on also the, not only like I talk about in my lecture, the location of the restaurant, the venue, but mainly the clientele, but also the cuisine. I mean, pizza places are great to do restaurant magic in because there's a long wait for the pizza. Steakhouses as well. The higher end of the higher end the restaurant is, the typically the longer the wait is, and so that's good for restaurant magic as far as being able to help the customers kill time where they're waiting for the food to come out. Conversely, like Mexican places are horrible, horrible places. I've worked at a couple, and the food comes out so quickly that you just don't have time to entertain the guest. I mean, there was one up at an outside mall here in Kansas City in Zona Rosa called Abuelo's Mexican Food Embassy, and it was a real nice high-end Mexican place. And I worked there for several years because the wait was a lot, a lot longer than the typical Mexican restaurant would be.
And also, the clientele makes a difference as to who's going to be booking you, because you were saying earlier about making contacts that you can then parlay into shows. And it seems like that if you're working a pizza place, they're going to be saying, "Oh, will you do Johnny's birthday party?" As opposed to if you're at a steakhouse, they're going to be saying, "Hey, we got a trade show coming up."
Right. Well, it depends too. I mean, yeah, I've booked high-end corporate gigs at pizza places as well. But yeah, I mean, that's why I kind of gravitated towards the higher end kind of places. Because it's you get the higher end bookings that way because you have a lot of business people that are coming in there. Every table I'm at gets a business card, and I always hand it out in a magical fashion. Usually, it's got like a a foot long flame coming off of it. It's kind of my tagline. One of my things I say is I pull out this flaming business card and I say I'm the hottest magician in the Midwest, and I blow it out and then I hand it to them. So they remember that. So I just, like I say in my lecture, always hand your business card out in a magical fashion, whether you back palm it. There's a lot of great marketed effects out there as far as getting your business card to people. Also, if they ask for my card, I will ask for their card in return because chances are they have a gig in mind that they want to book you for. So, I don't do business in the restaurant. I do business. I mean, I network at the restaurant, but I'm not there at the restaurant to get, I mean, I'm there to get bookings, but I'm not there to do business on the restaurant's time. Like I don't talk about, booking gigs or how much I charge. A lot of people will say, "Hey, what do you charge for this?" And I say, "Well, it depends on if you want strolling, stage." I also do a lot of inspirational speaking engagements using magic with meaning, magic with a message type of keynote presentations. I do extensive trade show work as well. So I don't know what they need. So that's why I tell them, "Hey, just give me a call or I'll shoot you an email, and we can talk about what it is that I can help you out with." So, but I don't want to do business on the restaurant's time because there's other tables waiting for entertainment there.
Well, exactly right. Yeah. And you're there really to entertain, and soliciting business is a side benefit and a big side benefit. And ultimately, I think one of the two reasons that people would want to do restaurants, one would be to get some experience and try some new things and get your timing down and everything. And then the other would be, of course, then to get new clients. In that case, when you're doing it, what do you do? Like, I'll tell you what I do when they don't have a card. In other words, if you got a business, I put my business cards out to begin with, as I start, so that way that they can reach and take one without saying anything. But if they do, then I'm going to say, "Can I have one of your cards?" And it seems like 9 times out of 10 said, "No, you don't have one on me." I would then have a pencil and paper or pull out something just to say, "Well, can you jot your email down or phone number so this way I can keep your contact information?" How do you get around that when they don't have a card?
I do the same thing.
Okay.
I mean, I have, business cards. Some of them have things printed on the back, but I always have some blank ones that I use. That way I can jot down their information, their contact information. So, yeah,
Well,
definitely.
I'm just wondering today how relevant business cards really are, because I use a digital card basically where you can tap and has all your information on that. Are you finding more and more of that to be the case too?
Yeah, that is definitely the case. I mean, business cards were a thing in the past, and it's too bad because there's so many great tricks you can do with
Oh,
business
sure.
cards out there on the market, like I said earlier. But it's just like newspapers. The torn restored newspaper, Gene Anderson torn restored newspaper is such a great trick, but nobody reads newspapers anymore. You know, and it's sad too, because a lot of people don't carry cash. I do some really strong magic with cash. You know, it's obviously it has an inherited value to it, so you're obviously capturing people's interest because you're borrowing their money. But a lot of times, nobody has cash anymore. So, yeah, it's a different age. It's a different world that we live in. Like you were talking about cigarette magic. You know, I used to do the old cigarette through quarter back in the day. I used to smoke back in the day. You know, like 28 years ago, I quit smoking 28 years ago. You know, I sold all my cigarette tricks. You know,
yeah. Well, I hadn't thought so much about the cashless society that we're in. I haven't worked restaurants in a few years. I worked restaurants for 20, 25 years regularly, but haven't now for quite some time. But I would think, yes, that we are more in a cashless society where everyone is using PayPal, Venmo, and everything else, which gets me to the point as far as getting tips. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a little QR code or something that you should say, you know, here's, you know, put that on the side of your mat or on the table or whenever you're performing. And if people, you know, want to tip you, they can scan that and send something to you.
You know, that's funny. I do. I carry one in my wallet now just because, and you know, soliciting tips has never been my style. You know, I don't want to feel like I'm there to pressure people for
exactly.
tips, you know,
right.
I just want to be I just want to entertain people. You know, I think if you're getting in the restaurant business to make a lot of tips, then, you know, you might want to rethink that. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't get a tip at all. Sometimes you get a really nice tip. I mean, the biggest tip I ever got was like $257, monetarily speaking. But then I also got a little drawing from a little girl, you know, that she wanted to make a drawing for me, you know, to show her appreciation for the magic I did at her table. And that was just as meaningful as the monetary tip. But, you know, it's so funny because a lot of people, a lot of customers like, hey, do you take Venmo? And another magician of mine, he works restaurants, and he's like, are you getting this all the time? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you know, I just can't bring myself to put a QR code on the back of my business card, you know, because it's just, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'd make more money doing that. But like I said, it's just never been my style, you know, to try to hustle people for tips. You know, I always just say, you know, it's compliments of the house. If people ask me, am I supposed to tip you? You know, I say it's always appreciated, never expected, that kind of thing. But this is kind of my philosophy on tipping. But you know, you had mentioned earlier about, you know, restaurants, getting into restaurants, you know, practicing, getting your material honed. You know, that's another one of the great benefits of restaurant magic is just you get so tight, your effects become so polished and so perfected because you're doing them over and over and over again. It's a great way to break in new material. You know, and it's forcing you to always be creative because you always have to come up with new stuff. I always rotate stuff in and out. One thing I do want to say is I'm very adamant about this. You know, I've heard people say that restaurants are a great place to get paid to practice. And that just makes my skin crawl. Because, you know, practice is done at home. You know, you have practice that just as when you acquire musculature memory, you have practice where you're just getting the moves down. Then you have intelligent practice where you're coming up with the scripts and the pattern that you come up with. And then you move to rehearsal, you know, in front of a live person, preferably a video camera, you know, get that tight, get that down, and then go do it in the restaurant. You know, don't go to a restaurant to practice. Go to a restaurant to get polished. Is what I like to say. So
that's a good
you're really
idea.
Doing magic a disservice, I think, if you're just out, especially, you know, those of us that do restaurant magic full-time or part-time or make our living doing restaurant magic, you know, it does a discredit to people that are out there just, you know, they're just winging it. You know, they're just going out there. They buy a new trick. They go to the, you know, so I think some of the magic shops, which are, you know, few and far between now, brick and mortar magic shops, you know, you buy a magic shop, you know, get your business cards printed there at the magic shop. And then you go out that night, start doing gigs, you know, you know, there's even stuff that's self-working or stuff that, you know, the people, the magic dealers are like, no practice required, no skill required. I'm like, that has always bothered me.
Well, I agree. That's true. There's something that you don't buy today and perform tonight. Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And some people might look at a restaurant that way, saying, oh, this is a cool trick. However, there are some things, as we were talking about earlier, you talk about some boxes or tricks that are quote, self-working to a degree. That is that you really don't have to do anything but put the presentation into it. And there are some close-up effects that are kind of like that, that don't require necessarily a lot of practice. And it would make sense if you buy something, let's say for an example, the 52-on-1 card, right? It is what it is. There is no sleight of hand. You just turn around the card, card's right here, whatever. It's a joke card kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So you can buy
that, all the time.
That exactly. You can buy that kind of thing today and put it in the show tonight and work on your routine and what kind of response you get back from people who might give you some of your better lines that you'll end up putting in. So there are some things that kind of like that, that I would say are kind of self-working that perhaps that you could do. But for the most part, you're right. This is something that you should polish at home to a point where you've got all the rough edges off, and then you can make it into a diamond once that you actually start performing in front of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually have a 53-on-1 card. It has the Joker on there, and I have that printed on the back of my business card. And I use it all the time, but I just pull it out. You know, I say name a card. You know, don't get cute and say Larry or Bob or Susan. I don't want you to name like a real legitimate playing card. They say the Seven of Clubs. I say, how amazing would it be if I turned this card over and showed you the Seven of Clubs? There it is. Boom. They think the trick's over. And I do this as a closer, right? Because I say, that was the comedy. Here comes the magic. And so I say, you know, earlier when I approach a table, I say, I do comedy magic. So basically anything I say that's not funny is magic. And so then I do the gag, but then I pull my brainwave deck out and blow their minds with that, you know, because the Seven of Clubs is not only the only face-up card in the deck, but it's also the only odd-colored match card. And oftentimes I open with a Chicago opener. I do Bill Malone's version of Mind Reading Magician. So you have a, you know, the red deck with the blue card. And then so at the end, you know, I have a blue deck with a red card. So it kind of makes a nice little book in there. I do that. So that's one of those things I use, like I said. And what I like about that too is I give them the business card and I say, that's not a business card with a magic trick on the back. That is a magic trick you can do for your friends, family, neighbors, and coworkers that just happens to have my contact information printed on the other side. You know, so
right.
And so that way, you know, people come into a restaurant all the time. Hey, I did that for my nephew last week. He thought it was hilarious. You know, so
they will carry that card with him for a long time. I've known I've seen those on the back of not many, but a few guys who are pros. And I really say that because they are pros. They know the value of marketing and how that you can give out something. And that was another thing I was going to ask you about. And that is gift magic, like Jeff McBride would talk about, where you actually give something. To someone. So this way, a lot of times if you give somebody, they feel like they have to give something back to you. That's not the reason that you'll be giving it out. Of course, you're doing it because out of the magnanimity, out of the goodness of your heart.
For you to say.
That's right. Magnanimity of your heart that you could actually give this out and because you want to share this with someone. But oftentimes they'll say, oh, you know, here, take this. You know, they'll give you, you know, something which is far in excess of the value of what you have given them, although you've given them the joy of this experience at the table. I used to give out mind reading fish, you know, in the palm of your hands. There are some great tricks you can do with that, in which that you would have you know what the card's going to be. They could be on their hand, and you have the fish on their hand, and then the card face down that's underneath. And so you can say, well, which is underneath their palm. And as the fish will curl one way or the other, you say, well, it's a red card, it's a diamond or whatever, and then reveal it, turn it over, and say, you know, with a little bit of practice, you can do that too. You can keep that one, you know, as well. So they feel like that they've got not only just a mind reading fish, but also but maybe something they could, it might be a trick that they could figure out and can't.
Those are great. I used to give those out. I do the pearl poodles all the time.
Yep.
Those are great. I have a nice, funny routine I do with that. I make the little, I have an origami thing I do with a dollar bill. And I give these out for special occasions or, you know, sometimes if they just give me a good tip, I'll give them one of those. It looks like a top hat. And then you squeeze the sides of it and a bunny popped up. So the rabbit comes out of the hat. I make those when I go out to eat. I keep them in my wallet. I give them to servers when I'm out dining in restaurants as well. I've used the little wooden round tuets, which are great because I can manipulate those like I would a coin, do magic with those and hand them out and say, give me a call if you ever get a round tuet, because on the back of it, it says tuet. So I've used those as well. You know, all kinds of, you know, novelty items, little magic wands that have my name and website, phone number printed on them. The pointless pencils. I love the pointless pencils. I give those out and I'll say this, this is a lot like my act. It has no point to it. And I always get to laugh and I'll say, but it's also in case you like make a lot of mistakes, like not booking me for your company holiday party this year. And I'll give those out. So I've done a ton of different things over the years, giving out, the freebies, the brownies, the Blue Jays. I used to use all those little sponge products that you give out to people. I do a really cool sponge ball routine. I call them clown noses, and I give them the kid a clown nose at the end. They also get a clown nose sticker that I actually stick on their nose.
That's clever.
It's all kinds of stuff you can give out. Look, cocktail napkins. I used to do the little rose cocktail napkins,
Sure.
spritz them with rose water and glycerin for the
Right.
ladies, so it even smells like a rose. So yeah. And especially, what's great about that is I also give out things that brand the restaurant, to-go box stickers. The cocktail rose napkin that has the restaurant's logo on it, matchbooks that have the restaurant's logo on it. Sometimes it's the sugar packets are custom made. So I'm always branding the restaurant too, as well, giving away things that that will brand the restaurant.
When you're working a corporate event, and let's say you're working for ABC Corporation, do you bring something from the XYZ restaurant that you would, let's say, you have a sugar packet, so that's why you kind of promote the restaurant at corporate events? You know what I'm saying?
No, I've never done that.
Okay.
It's like, because you're there working for the company pretty much. And, it's like, oftentimes, yeah, I don't hand out business cards at corporate events because I'm not there
Right.
to get business unless they
Right.
ask for one, of course. But
What's your thought
it's
on
not that.
tips? What do you do when people offer you tips
I just
at a
sometimes,
corporate event?
it's, I just
It's
say it's not
kind of weird, isn't
necessary.
it?
I'm being paid by the company to be here.
Yeah.
So unless I'm doing a trick with the bill, and they say, here, keep it, then, maybe I'll pocket it. But yeah, I try not to, if I'm not soliciting tips in the restaurant, I'm certainly not going to solicit tips at a corporate venue. That gets back to the person that booked you. That might not bode very well.
No, that's true. I when the occasions that I've had that where they have sent to me at a corporate strolling event or something that if you would accept tips, and I'll say, well, no, I'm being paid handsomely. I'm already doing fine. So, and they've got the thing out. It's like they're holding it, and if they put it back, and I hope, I want them to put it back, but if they continue to insist, I kind of feel as if it's a rejection of their appreciation,
Yeah. Now you don't want to offend the giver. But in the restaurant setting, the downside to that is that they might feel like they might be able to assess your worth. If you accept a $5 tip, they think that what you make $60 an hour. Or
Right.
they might feel like they have the right to call you back over to the table. If the restaurant's busy, you might not be able to do that. So those are some downsides to accepting tips.
I remember talking with Charles Green III many years ago when he was living back in Houston. That would have been in the early 80s, I guess it was.
Oh yeah.
And
Yeah, he's great.
at the time, he was working 9 to 11 different restaurants a week.
Wow.
And his philosophy was exactly what you said right there, then, Keith, as far as not wanting to accept tips from the standpoint. It's like when they call you and you say it's going to be $2,500, for this. So what? I just gave you $5. I mean, that then they equate in your mind per hour what that should be, and it's like
Right.
that's nowhere near $2,500. So you don't
Right.
want to start setting an expectation. So I understand that. I think in reality, though, that if somebody again wants to give you something of whatever value, if it's 5 or 50 or 100 or whatever, that if they want to, then I think that that's fine. And I think it's fine if supplementing your income with that then as well. So I don't have a problem with taking the tips.
Yeah, and that's another thing on the subject of monetary compensation. When you're doing restaurant magic, you don't charge the restaurant, what
Of course
for like
not.
typically you're there for a couple hours, during dinner
Right.
rush. You don't charge the restaurant the same amount that you would charge, you would at a corporate venue. You charge the
Right.
restaurant significantly, a substantial, substantial amount less than what you would charge for a corporate booking, because you're there on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, and you're getting gigs there and everything. So I just wanted to throw that out there in case, somebody's interested in getting into restaurant magic. You don't charge the restaurant what you would charge a normal gig. So
No, and it varies also in most restaurants, but you have to take a look at what the costs that they're probably incurring anyhow for their labor. In other words, they're probably paying a minimum wage, or often cases for wait staff, something less, because they encourage them to work even harder for their tips. If they gave them minimum wage, then they their thinking is, well, they're not going to try hard, but if we give them less, they've got to make up for that, and they got to work harder, kind of a thing. Likewise, that if you're working as a magician for a restaurant, I think that it should be certainly much more than what the minimum wage would be, because you're providing a different kind of a service.
Well, also, I always tell people, like I talked about in my lecture as well, you don't want to charge them by the hour. Mm-hmm. Because that's going to seem like a lot, you know, compared to what they're paying the waitstaff. You want to charge them by a block of time, which is a 2-hour increment. So, or sometimes three, it depends. Like I've worked brunches before, I worked 4 hours, on a brunch, like for Mother's Day or Father's Day or something like that as well. But especially if the restaurant's busy, sometimes you might end up working late as well, but you always want to make sure you're charging by a block of time. Not by the hour.
That's a good point, and I agree with that from the standpoint that a lot of times I will be working a little bit, quote, overtime. Let's say I'm working from 7 to 9, and I'm still there at 9:15. I don't go back in and say, well, you owe me another X dollars for these 15 minutes of overtime, because there might be someone who has just walked in, or they were served late, or they're having an issue or whatever. I kind of feel like that is part of the relationship you have then with the restaurant, that right. They could depend upon you as being a valid employee, which goes back to, again, the tipping thing. I had an issue with one of the restaurants I worked with for a while, in which you were talking about how that you would get food at the end of the evening. Well, I would get something to take home then as well. And when I did, they were initially giving this to me for free. And then when I went into, after a few months, went in to get my check, and the manager was saying, well, you know, you are a contract employee, and as such, you need to be buying this just as anyone else would be. So in other words, you're a customer, you're not an employee, you're here on contract basis. We can extend a discount to you, but, you know, it's not going to be free. And it was something that wasn't in a contract or something. I had taken over this job from someone else who had had it before, and they had this kind of arrangement. And I just think that for whatever reason that changed. And so I said, well, I understand. That's fine. And so I just paid them whatever and continued on. But it made me start to think about how that I am not a server, and I'm not a magician. I'm, as I said, a contract employee. I'm coming in. Mm-hmm. And so as such, I'm being paid at a much higher level than what the servers are being paid. And that's why you don't want to upset them either, obviously, because they know that you're getting something better, but you are also helping them get a better tip if they are recommending you to come to this person's table and entertain them, because they have, they're having a good experience. And that experience goes to including the service they've had from the wait staff. Mm-hmm. So as long as that they have been giving you good service, and then they bring the magician over, it's kind of like, you know, I'm your butler, I'm the person who's helping and assisting you, then they get a bigger tip. So I haven't in the past shared my tips with the on any percentage basis with the wait staff, which brings me to that question. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think you should share them with the wait staff, or are you
I do. Yeah, I mean, because, initially when you're, especially if you're starting out at a restaurant, you're going to be looked at as a threat. You're going to be looked at as competition for tips, you know, that the servers are looking at you as your tips are coming out of their percentage. Even though, you know, it's interesting you talk about you're a contract employee or you're a magician. I look at myself as a PR person for the restaurant. I'm a goodwill ambassador for the restaurant. I'm not there to do magic for people. I'm there to entertain the restaurant guests. If they need water refilled, if it's slow, I'll go refill their water for them. They didn't get silverware, I'll go get the silverware for them. I learned the table numbers, so that way if there's a problem with a meal, instead of the restaurant comping the dessert or the comping the meal, they can send me to the table to say, hey, go to table 7. And I go to table 7. I know where that is. I don't have to say, well, where's table 7? It's the guy with the green sweatshirt. And I look over and there's like three guys with green sweatshirts on, you know, like, what's what? But, you know, especially on trial night or when I'm new at the restaurant, I will oftentimes give my tips to the servers, you know, to win them over so that they understand that I'm a team player. You know, I'm not there as competition. I'm not there as a threat.
But you're setting a precedent by doing that, I think, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if you know, you can tell. I mean, I develop relationships not with just the patrons and the guests, but the management and especially the wait staff. I get to know them. You know,
Sure.
I they're having a hard time. I'm making a lot of money at the restaurants. I make a good living doing magic. You know, a lot of times, you know, they're single moms. They're struggling to make ends meet. You know, it goes a long way. You know, something else I do on trial night and even on a regular basis to this day. Is somebody says, you know, they offer me a tip, you know, they hand me a $5 bill, and I'll say, hey, you know what? I really appreciate that. Tell you what, would you do me a favor? And instead of, in lieu of a gratuity, would you mind just telling the server, you know, or the manager or the owner on the way out that you how much you enjoyed our time together? Not how much you liked my magic or not how funny you think I was, but how much you enjoyed our time together. Okay. That's worth its weight in gold right there. And something else that I think, like when I close my lecture, I always talk about what I think is the most important thing. If there's anything you take away from my lecture, I want it to be this: learn people's names.
Very
When
important.
somebody gets up to leave my restaurant, if I'm in the middle of a set, I will stop and I'll take a few seconds and I'll say, "Hey, Tony, Deborah, thanks for coming out tonight." And this is what happens. They're like, "He remembered our names. I don't remember his name. He remembered our names." And they will come back in the restaurant because I remembered their name. And chances are I will remember their name when I see him again. Not because I'm a smart guy, but because I just use a mnemonic like Harry Lorraine did. You know, and that's one of my biggest pet peeves is when I'm at a show and I see a magician, first of all, not even offer a round of applause for the person coming up on stage as encouragement and appreciation. But they'll get, you know, they'll get the Rubik's Cube out and they'll hand the Rubik's Cube over to Sally and they'll enter, hi, I'm, you know, first of all, they'll ask them their name. I always reintroduce myself to the person. You know, I was introduced at the beginning of the show, but they're not going to remember my name. So I reintroduce myself. Then I ask for their name. I do that as in my table approach as well. I introduce myself. I greet them with a smile. You know, I make conversation with them. I make eye contact. But when I see a magician up on stage or, you know, I say, what is your name? Sally. And then he starts twisting his Rubik's Cube and she twists her Rubik's Cube up. And 20 seconds later, he's like, I'm sorry, what was your name again? I'm sorry, what is your name? You know, they
That's
lose
horrible.
me, first of all, they lose the audience because what does that tell Sally? What does that tell the audience? It tells them that you don't care. They might as well just be another Rubik's Cube up there because they're just another prop for you to do magic at. You know, you are there to do magic with people. You know, respect the audiences, respect it if it's a restaurant table or if it's a person on stage. They're allowing you, because of them, you're able to do what you love to do. Show that love by remembering their name.
Well, you're absolutely right, Stephen. I think I've told the story several times on the podcast in the past, and that is where the first job that I got out of college was when I had gone into a room with three gentlemen, and I had shown them my portfolio for an advertising agency that I was wanting to work for. Well, anyhow, they and called me back and hired me, and they said the reason we wanted to have you back is because you remembered our names. Everyone else who came in had good qualifications, but the deciding factor was you called us each by name. Because as I left, I said, "Thank you, Mr. So and So," and you know all their names as I was leaving. And you don't know how important and how sweet the sound of your name is until that actually affects you like that. And you see it on a regular basis when you're like at a cocktail party and you're walking away, you know, "Thank you very much. Like you say, you know, Tony and Melinda, and glad to have you guys here and help with the magic. It's been great meeting you." And they look around and say, "How does he remember our name?" They may not remember the trick, but all of a sudden they have to start recalling all of the stuff that you had done, because if he remembers my name, I should remember more about him. Who was that guy again?
And that's why they come back into the restaurant. I mean, the
Sure.
most beautiful sound anyone can hear is the sound of their own name.
Sweetest
And when I'm
sound.
performing in the restaurant, I'll use the person's name three, four times, you know, throughout the set while I'm there at the restaurant. And I do it on stage as well because when a person's on stage, they're nervous. You know, there's instructions to be had, there's processes, there's procedures they need to do. And when you say their name, you know, it redirects their attention, but also I think it puts them at ease as well because they know that you care. Right. So that's another reason it's important to learn people's names.
As we are actually reaching the end of this episode in our discussion, I actually want to start at the beginning of what we probably should have mentioned. That is about how you get these restaurant jobs and going and approaching them. How do you find the right restaurant to go to and the right time of day or which day of the week that you would mm-hmm. go and talk with the manager or the general manager or whoever's going to be doing the hiring?
That's a real great point. The best time to go to a restaurant, to prospect a restaurant, is between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. Or between 2 and 4 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday. You don't want to go on Monday or Friday because the restaurant managers are really busy at that point in time. You want to walk in. You want to have your suit on, pressed, hair groomed, nails trimmed, shoes shined. You want to present a professional image. Even if you're doing, balloons or whatever, you're just, working at a family friendly restaurant. I always have a promo kit with me that has like a one sheeter. It has some accolades in there. It has my headshot. Have a sample of a lobby board of like what I'll be posting in the lobby of the restaurant so that mm-hmm. owners or managers can see that as well. I also have a sheet that I think is the most effective thing in my promo kit. It's called Restaurant Raves. And what that is it's a page of paragraphs of what restaurant owners and managers have said about how I've brought business into the restaurant and how much the guests enjoy me being there. Sometimes they say, Keith's an amazing magician, or they'll say he's hilarious or whatever, but that really kind of helps sell that to other restaurants as well. And usually when you go in, you cold call. I mean, you can try to call a restaurant and leave a message for a manager. I can count on one hand the amount of times I received a return phone call.
Exactly.
From restaurant managers. They don't reply to emails either. And it's just because they're busy. I mean, they work 80 hours a week, on average. They're just, they don't have time for that. That's why you really have to drop in and cold call the restaurant. Have one or two of your best effects with you. I don't even do magic at that point unless they ask. I want to be able to pitch the free trial night where I can go in for a couple of hours and let them see me in action. Not necessarily me. I tell them, I was like, watch the experience that your patrons are having. Don't watch me. Watch them laughing. Watch them smiling. That's what's really going to sell restaurant magic is the customer's appreciation and enjoyment of what you're doing for the restaurant.
That's good advice. One thing I had heard as a great tip from Scott Hollingsworth, who was a pioneer in restaurant magic decades and decades ago, it was that he suggested that you would join networking groups where you would have food and beverage managers from hotels and restaurants and different places, because just like the Rotary, the Lions Club or whatever groups of organizations have their luncheons or evening dinners or whatever, they have these get-togethers monthly in which they kind of exchange different ideas and maybe employees or, someone's moving from one company to the other. But of course, they're always looking, as these other fraternal organizations are, they're looking for someone to give them some speech or to talk a little bit. And so he said that's a great place to showcase yourself, because first of all, you join the group or you kind of get involved and then say, well, I'm a magician. I could provide a program for you then as well, if you'd like. And then when you do, then that's a great place for you to be seen by the right people, because they'll remember that then also. And you're showcasing for them, because there might be some managers that you may not be able to get into, because as you say, if you're just dropping in to see them for a variety of reasons, you may not be able to get to see them that day, might have to come the next day or next week. And even when you do, you may not get to show them those couple of great tricks. But if you actually have a 20-30 minute window that you're showcasing, I guess, to this larger group, you might have with that wider audience, might have a better opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and not only that, but when I first started out doing magic full time, I mean, I joined a lot of chambers of commerce. A lot of networking events. I went to a lot of Rotary clubs, Lions clubs, just, mm-hmm. Networking, not even getting paid, but acting as if I was being paid. Like I'm working the room, at a networking event or a chamber of commerce, morning coffee, as if I was working at a corporate gig, just passing out business cards, magically doing magic for everyone. And it's funny too, because now those chambers hire me to come to their mixers just to, bring the wow factor, so to speak, and now I'm getting paid to be there, but I'm also networking as if I was, when I first started out. So
I have a friend who's a Rotarian who said the incoming president, international president, this lady who's coming in from Philadelphia, is going to be having as her theme for the new year, magic. And so this lady who was telling me about that was saying, I'm just kind of giving you a heads up that you might want to pass this on to the rest of your listeners, because this might be an opportunity, certainly, that, of course, the Rotary is always looking for different. I mean, each Rotary club around your location will want to hire you anyhow, but they are particularly keen right now for going out and looking for magicians rather than just you showing up. So they're going to be much more open to seeing you. And perhaps that could be a good showcase then as well, not just at a local level, but of course, as you said then, Keith, that they've got other kinds of regional, state and national and international meetings in which that they do have a good budget for that.
Yeah. So, well, and you mentioned something too about, you know, they have a magic theme. I mean, I can't tell you how many events I've been to where the theme is magic. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they reach out to Army the following year or in a few years, and they have a different theme. And I can tie into any theme. That's one of the reasons I named my company Magic Creations. It's all one word with one C. I've actually coined the term magic comedy, all one word with one C as well. And that's what I present my my general entertainment magic show is magic comedy, all one word with one C in quotes. But I create magic based on what the client's needs are. So I have magic that I do for any holiday, like any theme you can imagine. Like I'm doing a St. Patrick's Day corporate event tomorrow for a luncheon, and I'm doing St. Patrick's Day magic, you know, with green mm-hmm. props, all the patterns scripted out for St. Patrick's Day. That's why I do a lot of trade show work, is because I'll promote the company's product. Even if they don't have a tangible product I can manipulate and do magic with, I'll just communicate the key business strategies to that, their potential clients, you know, at the trade show booth to stop traffic at their booth.
Sure.
So I think that's one of the reasons I've had the success I have, the modicum of success that I enjoy, is because I put the extra time into creating magic. Being creative is one of my, you know, magic was my hobby for a long time. It was my avocation before it became my vocation, is that I can tie into anything. Las Vegas nights, you know, it's almost sure. like I work with these companies. Some of them hire me every year. They're like, okay, let's see what you do with this theme. And I show up and they're like, they're so impressed that I can do a themed magic act, whether it's a stage show or parlor show or close-up magic, you know, I can always tie into a theme. And that's why they go with me as opposed to just any other magician, because any other magician's just going to do, you know, general magic. And right. that's, you know, a bulk of what I do is just general comedy magic. But, you know, they mention a theme or they have a topic, or, you know, I do a lot of keynote presentations as well. It's because of my ability to do that. So,
well, we've covered a lot of areas over here, and I appreciate the time that you've given us. And I think we've reached pretty much the end of our time for right now. But I always like to close by asking what my guest's magic word is. What's your philosophy of life?
Hmm. Well, Sean, that's a really good question.
Touché.
You know, my tagline is making events magically memorable. I've always used that. You know, I mean, I want them to remember me. You know, like I can't tell you how many laymen I see at, especially in the restaurants. Like, hey, we saw this guy on a cruise ship did this trick, this really great trick with this, you know, whatever it is. You know, he did this Rubik's Cube trick. I'm like, oh, yeah, what was his name? And nobody ever, I think, that I can remember, ever remembers anybody's name. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be magically memorable. I don't want my magic to be magically memorable. I don't want my comedy to be magically memorable. I want me to be magically memorable. I mean, that's one of the reasons I create magic based on what the client's needs are. And I'm creative in that regard as people. I want people to remember me, not just what, you know, one of my favorite quotes is that, you know, people might not remember what you did, but they'll always remember the way that you made them feel.
Yeah, my Angelou,
so I always, think. You know, try to engage people's emotions and you know, empathy and being sympathetic and just being vulnerable and just making that connection with people, tripping the footlights, you know, getting people to care about you. If they care about you, because you know that they care about them, they're gonna care about your magic and just gonna make your shows or your close up sets
love
so
that.
Much stronger.
That's a good way to close. That's a good thing too for people to think about. Keith, thanks very much. I appreciate your time and your thoughts and words. This has been great.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Keith Leff. This is Scotty Al.
Thank you, Keith, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. You just gave a lot of really great advice on so many different subjects, and I hope that everyone who was listening got a lot out of that. I remember a few weeks ago when we had Ken Weber, and he was suggesting carrying with you a little notepad so that you could jot down ideas, because a lot of times you think you'll remember them, but you don't. So this is one of those times you might need to go back actually and with a notepad and actually jot down some of these ideas that he was suggesting. Great thoughts, great tips, great advice from a real worker. I appreciate it. Well, I mentioned at the beginning that we were going to announce the name of the winner. And again, I want to thank Ian Rowland for offering this prize for one of our lucky listeners. So the winner of the contest is Tim Qualls. Congratulations. Your prize will be sent out shortly. I have spoken with Ian and given him your name and email address, and so this way you will be sent the copy of the book you request, because it was one out of three different books that you had a choice of selecting for your prize, and he will have that sent out to you. Let me also say I appreciate all of the many dozens and dozens of people who had entered this contest, but again, there can only be one winner. However, each of you are winners, whether you entered the contest or not. I want to invite everyone again, if you'll go to Ian's website, that's ianrowland.com/magic, all lowercase magic, you can then get an opportunity to download some free books and some other free stuff. And there's also an opportunity to buy the one thing he does have for sale there, which is called ThinkLink, which is a pretty cool trick you might look at and consider purchasing then as well. But a lot of free cool stuff, or I should say cool free stuff, that's available over there at ianrowland.com/magic. Well, I think it's time to wrap up here for this week. We have several more great episodes in the future for us. I want to remind everybody, if you have not yet subscribed to the Pod Letter, please do so. If you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there should be a pop-up where it says subscribe to the Pod Letter. And if not, there is a tab there that you can click on to go and subscribe. And that way that you can find out everything that's going on with the Magic Word Podcast, who's coming up next week, and also some suggestions from the archives. And also, if you've got just a few moments to spare, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes or whatever platform you use to listen to these podcasts and give us a 5-star review with some nice comments. That helps our podcast to grow, and that'd be great. And again, it's been a while since I made a little appeal for financial donations. We do need to keep this podcast going, and there are a lot of expenses that are associated with this, and not just my time that I put into it, but also some real costs that are involved in producing this from week to week. So if you can help us out, you can become a friend of the Magic Word, we would certainly appreciate it. Again, going to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you can click on something that will say become a friend of the Magic Word. You can watch a video and understand why we need your support. And then also you can give us a donation, or better still, to pledge on a monthly basis and receive some pretty cool perks along the way too. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to make your magic memorable so people will remember you. This is Scotty out.